Hey folks, how you doing? It's the Conference USA Podcast, episode 4. And we're coming to you delayed, as usual, as podcasts normally are. Last week, we were a little excited about North Texas beating Arkansas because that was such a big win for the league coming off a week in which the Sun Belt owned this league 3-0 2 weeks ago. Now we have the biggest upset in league history and probably the biggest upset in Virginia history. How about we jump right into it and talk with a friend of the show, Ed Miller of the Virginian Pilot. Let's jump right into that. Okay, so I think by all accounts, the biggest win in Old Dominion history. Also, I think somewhere mixed in there, like one of the biggest upsets in ACC history. So could you put all of this into perspective? What does it mean for Old Dominion, for Virginia, for everybody, I guess?
Yeah, it was, as you said, easily the biggest win in ODU history. They had never played a ranked team, FBS ranked team. They had never beaten a Power Five. And certainly, you know, it was the first time Virginia Tech had played at Old Dominion, the Old Dominion team. They played in Norfolk many years ago. But, you know, this was a game that was anticipated literally for years, ever since it was signed in 2012, which was at the time considered to be a real boon, you know, for Old Dominion to schedule a program like Tech, which, you know, in the state of Virginia, they're the flagship. I mean, it's not even close. Virginia, University of Virginia has not beaten Virginia Tech. I believe the streak is now 15 or 16. It might even be more than that. I can't recall off the top of my head, but it's been a long time. And coaches have been fired over that in Virginia. Among other things. But for ODU to pull this off was just improbable, you know, incomprehensible. Just whatever you want to say. I mean, it was 28-point underdogs. You know, nobody gave them a chance. Really, and I'll be honest, myself included, I did not think they had it in them. I thought they could give them a game for a while, you know, possibly, but there really been no indication that there was anything like this, you know, within that team, given the first three games they played, which I'm sure you're well aware of how that had gone. But, yeah, it's huge. I mean, it's still one win, of course. You can't overlook that. But, yeah, just in terms of the presence, the notoriety, it's unlike anything Old Dominion's ever had. I mean, ESPN, I know Bobby's doing some stuff Sunday, some national radio. So, yeah, it's absolutely huge. Hard to overstate how big the win is.
So, if we can go back to what you said about how this is like an anticipated game, like it really seemed like going into this that it was kind of a lost opportunity, because I know everybody was looking forward to this game, right? They're like, hey, this could be the year. I think it seemed in preseason like, you know, this could be possible simply for the fact that this is one of the, what was thought to be one of the better Old Dominion teams coming back, and say, hey, if there's any time, this is a perfect time to play them, you get them at home, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, the three losses and the way that they lost to begin the season really put a damper on things. But, like, what was the mood leading up to this game? Was it excitement? Did anybody, like, around campus, did they feel like it was a lost opportunity or a missed opportunity?
Yeah, I think a lot of the, there was still some buzz around the game, and the game did sell out. But you've got to remember that here in this part of Virginia, and throughout the state, you know, there's an awful lot of Virginia Tech fans. Virginia Tech has recruited this area really well. I mean, Michael Vick, Bruce Smith, Cam Chancellor, just to name a few, all came out of the 757, as they call southeastern Virginia. So, the ODU fans are, you know, they were showing up. I'm not sure if they knew what to expect, but, and the players were quietly, I wouldn't say... I guess confident may not be exactly the right word, but a little bit, you know, certainly just saying, hey, we got a chance, you know, don't count us out on, the Charlotte loss was a real punch in the gut the way it came. it was a short week. They had to go down there on Thursday because of the weather here, the hurricane. And, you know, that was one they really needed to get. I mean, you know, Charlotte won one game last year. So, yeah, and there was a sense that, yeah, we finally got these guys here. As I wrote, you know, it's like the big guests are arriving, you know, your rich relatives are finally coming to visit your place, and it's a mess. You know, you haven't, your house is a mess. And, yeah, it was definitely some of the luster was off the game, for sure. It was a sense that, you know, I talked to Nick Clark, one of the fifth-year seniors on the team, and he said that, hey, we've been talking about this game for years, about the season for years, because they knew that in 2014 was the first chance they really had to redshirt a lot of freshmen. And so they figured by the time we're fifth years, we're going to have a lot of experience, we're going to be pretty good, we're going to be a maturing team, which is, you know, honestly what I thought they would be, you know, after last year going 5-7 with a lot of injuries. You know, this team has 22 seniors, which is a lot, and a bunch of them are fifth-year seniors, and 16 starters, and, you know, it was just puzzling as to why they got off to the start they did. But, you know, they went a long way towards redeeming themselves Saturday night, so we'll see what happens from here. I mean, they're still not out of the woods by any stretch. They're 1-3, they're 0-2 in the conference, and they've got a really tough slate coming up beginning Saturday against East Carolina down there, and then they've got FAU in Boca, and then they've got Marshall coming here. So, you know, those three pretty tough games.
Yeah, and I kind of joked last week after the Charlotte loss that I was like, you know, maybe Brad Lambert just kind of climbed over Bobby Wilder in the, you know, the hot seat rankings, like a little ladder match or something.
Right.
Yeah, how does this, I mean, like, was he ever on the hot seat there, Bobby? And is he off of it now because of this? I mean, this is legendary. It's a legendary win, right? It's going to go down in history. So,
yeah, it was definitely warming up. I mean, you know, I always make the analogy of a guy that, you know, starts a tech company. You know, maybe he's got one good idea for an app or something, you know, and he's got one good idea. His company takes off, and then it gets too big for him to manage it. And, you know, we've seen this, and they got to bring in some, you know, more experienced people to run it. So Bobby was the perfect guy to start football here. He's very outgoing and you know, just really a good communicator and very enthusiastic. He was the perfect guy to go out and sell the program when they were getting started. And, you know, there was a contingent of people who were saying, hey, maybe he's done all he can do here. You know, maybe we need, you know, to get somebody else. So, yeah, the seat was definitely getting warmer. I think this really cooled it quite a bit. Now, we'll see what happens the rest of the year. But certainly, you know, this is a flagship win and something that people around here are going to remember for a long time. So, yeah, I think it took a considerable amount of heat off of Wilder. And, you know, he looked like he's been feeling it. I mean, talking to him after the games, he's had stunned looks on his face. You know, he had a different kind of Saturday night, you know, as he described it, kind of surreal, but obviously a much different outcome. So, I think it did, and it took some of the heat off him for sure.
Yeah, I think maybe if you asked around, you know, they traded three losses for the one win over Virginia Tech, I think a lot of people would probably make that trade any day of the week. Just from the outpouring of emotion and just kind of reaction there. So, you know, maybe it was all kind of fate there. Blake LaRussa, 495 yards passing. I know last time you were on the podcast, we talked about him, and I don't think either of us looked at him as you know, a 495 yard, you know, passer kind of dude. But he was amazing. I think a lot of that was, you know, his receivers, you know, Travis Fulgham, 9 catches, 188 yards, and Duhart, 9 catches, 142 yards, 3 scores. It seemed like a lot of the offense was, hey, let's throw it up to our talented receivers and see if they can go make a play. I mean, how much is that Blake LaRussa? How much is that the receivers? I mean, what prompted this change in quarterback? I mean, give us all of it.
Yeah, you're right about the game plan. The game plan was, you know, pretty much, you know, Virginia Tech's got Bud Foster as the defense coordinator. He's kind of a legend around here in particular, you know, just the guy that's been one of the best coordinators in the country. He's been there 24 years. And their defenses are very voracious. They're aggressive. And but one thing they saw was the corners, Virginia Tech's corners are young, and Old Dominion's best receivers, Newhart and Fulgham, are fifth-year guys, pretty big, rangy guys, about 6'3", 215. And, you know, they said, there's something we can do. So, as Bobby mentioned in his press conference, one thing Blake LaRussa does well is throw the, as he described it, the man coverage ball. He's just really good at throwing a catchable ball up there. You know, he pressed man coverage. He's just got a knack for locking those kind of soft balls up there that you know, give a guy a position to make a play on. And, you know, Fulgham and Duhart particularly were able to do that. So I think and there was a big moment, too, when Blake came in. They were pinned at the one-yard line, which is a heck of a position to put a guy in.
Yeah.
Hey, kid, get in the game. We're backed up to the goal line. But he threw a 30-yard pass there. I think it was Fulgham. I have to look, but. And that, you know, that was a big play. It kind of gave them a sense of they didn't even score on that drive. But they did cross midfield, which is something they hadn't done last year at Virginia. I'm sorry, they did it once at Virginia Tech last year, and they got to the 49. So, you know, they sort of ticked off these little milestones. Like, hey, we're going to cross midfield, and they did. And then we're going to score, which they didn't do last year, and they did. And, you know, each moment was kind of bigger than the last one, and they kept piling these on, and they had answers for everything that Virginia Tech did. But yeah, that was the game plan, and you know, Stevie Williams just again came out, didn't look at all sharp on the first drive, and you know, they really wasted no time. I guess they figured they didn't have any time to waste. Put in LaRussa. I'm not sure if he'd gone three and out that he would have stuck, but he was hot, and they just rode the hot hand, and then it was clear that he was, you know, having just an unreal day. I mean, 495 yards is, you know, it was funny. Somebody in the press box asked, what's the record here? Somebody said, oh, 720, whatever Heineke had. In FCS, he had a New Hampshire. I think he threw for over 700 yards. So, it's, you know, that'll never be broken. But 495 is pretty good on any level. So, yeah, LaRussa is just a guy who's been in the program a long time. He's a local kid. To walk on and had literally no Division I offers, not even FCS offers. You know, he's about 5'10", 5'11", maybe, about 180. And he's just, you know, very popular with his teammates. He's a guy that just has continued to work, be really humble. And, you know, honestly, I've watched him in practice for a couple of years and seen him in games, and I always thought, yeah, he's a good guy to put in. I always thought he was competent, but, you know, if I'd be lying if I said I thought, you know, he'd ever have a day like this. So
he would be the difference maker against Virginia Tech. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I got to tip my hat to Blake. I mean, he's a good kid. And, you know, people, his teammates really, really like him. And, you know, he's the guy right now. And it was clear before the game was over. He's going to be the quarterback going forward for the moment. So that'll be interesting to see what they do with Williams because he's played three games. So he could, you know, still redshirt.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, you can redshirt even, you don't have to be a freshman to play three, right? That rule doesn't just apply to freshmen. I think it applies to anybody. So
right. He
could possibly get that redshirt year that he didn't get last year, which ultimately might be, you know, better for his development. But what Bobby Wilder pointed out last night, too, was that, you know, he said, is every team we play the rest of the year going to just play, you know, man, Duhart and Fulgham? He's like, I don't think so. So Blake's going to have to throw the other balls, too, you know, like in zone coverages and things like that. And he hasn't been successful there, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, he's really tough. He hung in the pocket. He took a lot of hits. I mean, he probably got knocked down 10, 15 times. He only sacked three times, but he got hit a lot. But he stood in there. And he, you know, the kid had an incredible day. I mean, something I'm sure he'll remember forever. So, yeah, ODU fans will too.
Yeah, talk about seizing your moment, you know?
Jeez. Yeah, okay. Oh, he seized it. Yeah, he's had moments. So people forget he started. He was a starter last year coming out of camp.
Yeah.
He was the starter in week one against, was it Albany? And then they played at UMass, and they went with another guy who since transferred. No, I'm sorry, Blake did start that game, and the other guy finished it, Jordan Hoy. Hoy started the third game against North Carolina, and LaRusha came in. Neither one of them did anything at all, so that was the launch of the Stephen Williams era, which, you know, has been interrupted here about a year later. But you know, I'm sure Stephen's still got a bright future. It's just a question of, you know, maybe a little time away will do him good.
Yeah, I think maybe – I think if he does sit, I think that'll be good for his development. And you know, if LaRusha can kind of reroute the ship, I think maybe that gives, you know, the Monarchs some hope for the rest of the season. Like you said, the slate looks a little tough. I think like the advanced numbers say that they're not favored in every game this season except for like Rice and VMI. I still don't know if a bowl game is on the table, but I mean, I didn't think they had any shot at beating Virginia Tech either. So, I mean, what do I know?
No, you never know. I mean, they made a run last year. I mean, obviously, I think they needed to win out. They needed to win their previous last four,
mm-hmm.
and they won three before Middle Tennessee just swamped them. And, you know, there's some toss-up games in there. There's Western Kentucky. You know, Middle Tennessee has to come here, so we don't, you know, that's your, I mean, certainly if you beat Virginia Tech, you've got to look at anybody and say, hey, we can beat them.
Yeah.
You know, even East Carolina is a kind of enigmatic team. They lost to North Carolina A&T in their opener, and then they beat North Carolina. And then, you know, they haven't played since because they've had weather issues too. But, you know, that's not a game that is outside the realm. A possibility for ODU, particularly in light of, you know, Saturday, the Virginia Tech game. They've got to go down there to Greenville, but, you know, it's a regional game here. It's about two and a half hours, so they got some guys from that part of the country, too. So, you know, it's a game that they certainly could win. And, you know, this is what makes those three losses so damaging, because you look at it, if they could have gotten one of those,
mm-hmm.
you know, 2-2 is so much better than 1-3. If they could have somehow gotten the Charlotte game or the FIU game, which were close, you know, Liberty was just, you know, a debacle. I mean, that was just inexplicable as this Tech game was in the other way. So, but, you know, it is what it is. They're 1-3, but, you know, they'll always have Virginia Tech no matter what happens.
Yeah. I think maybe, you know, like, if everything goes right, I think obviously to even contend for the conference title, you got to beat Florida Atlantic, you got to beat Marshall, you got to beat Western Kentucky. And I think the what stood out to me, you know, as you're talking about the defensive strategy from Virginia Tech, that North Texas has had, you know, big turnaround this year defensively, right? They're, I think, top three, top four in the nation in a lot of categories when they were bottom three, bottom four in a lot of those categories last year. But they've had a lot of success going man with their corners and attacking that way. So I guess if you're an Old Dominion fan and you look at North Texas, that might be, you know, that one's in Virginia also. That's a road game for North Texas. So, you know.
Yeah, Old Dominion's been talking about it ever since Sir Kevin came last year. They always said, you know, we want to take advantage of these matches on the outside. We've got good receivers, you know, Duhart and Fulgham, like I mentioned, are big guys. Yeah, Harper's a real kind of a slot, really fast. And we just got to get the ball in the hands of our playmakers. And they really hadn't been able to do that. I mean, Williams was just kind of scattershot with his throws and with his pocket presence. I mean, you know, you never kind of knew what you get. And, you know, he'd bail out in some plays, and he was missing a lot of balls and, on his throws. And, you know, LaRusha just stood in there and distributed the ball, you know, which is what you got to do. He had a few little scrambles here and there. He's, you know, relatively mobile. He's a small guy, so he can kind of scoot around. But they played like 8-man protection, you know, and then they just put these guys out on the edge. And, you know, so it was, and, you know, Virginia Tech kind of never adjusted. But I don't know. I mean, Bud Foster's far from me to question him, but they never really you know, I think they just, maybe they just felt like, hey, we're better. You well, know, we I mean, can cover these guys.
I think the other part
time
is,
and time again, you know, Newhart and Fulgham came up with, you know, big plays.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the other part is like maybe, you know, Jeremy Cox forced his hand. You know, I mean, he was tough to tackle there, and I think, you know, he had that late, you know, 40-yard TD. But I mean, he was breaking tackles seemingly all game. So I mean, maybe Bud didn't think that they could tackle Jeremy Cox with less than, you know, less than everybody they had out there. You know.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, late, as Wilder said, they kind of spread it out. And they decided we're going to run. You know, they really came out throwing the ball. I mean, that was what they felt like they had to do. But, you know, in the fourth quarter, spread them out, and, you know, Cox was lathered up, fresh, and he is a very hard runner. He's a physical guy. He's had ankle problems all year, so he's been kind of not himself.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he was amazing. I mean, and it wasn't even expected to really start. They have a freshman, Lala Davis, who Bobby had kind of announced early in the week was going to start, but Lala, you know, just got a couple carries, and I don't know if they felt like the moment was too big for him, or whether maybe just Jeremy had recovered, you know, more than they expected. But yeah, Cox was a factor as well. And ironically, you know, Wilder felt like they wore Virginia Tech down a little bit over the course of the game, which generally it's the other way around. I mean, it's always the Power Fives that wear down the mid-majors.
Yeah.
But, you know, Old Dominion felt like the fresher team. They ran a lot of plays. It was a kind of a muggy day. So, you know, they kept the Hokie defense out there a long time.
Yeah, I think what's remarkable is that both teams had 600 yards of offense. I mean, not a whole lot of defense in this one. I mean, the Hokie,
right.
Yeah, the whole game is incredible. It's just like any number you look at, you're like, what? And especially considering the context, you know, we've been following Old Dominion all season, so seeing these numbers, I'm like, are you sure these aren't season totals, you know, like 632?
Oh, no, their offense was, you know, pick a stat. I mean, third down percentage, time possession, total offense, scoring. They were among the dregs of the country, and, you know, people were upset about the play calling, and it, you know, in general, like, we're not very creative, and, you know, that, you know, they answered some critics there. But, yeah, and to your point on the defense, I mean, and Wilder acknowledged, he said, basically, we never really stopped them, you know, but they did have a couple significant moments, and they had one interception. They had a couple of sacks early in the game that kind of set a tone that they weren't going to be just run over.
Yeah.
And they had a couple, you know, pass breakups late. So, you know, Tech went up to 600 yards, but the bottom line is, you know, limiting kept them out of the end zone. And, of course, you know, we should point out that, you know, Josh Jackson, the quarterback, was hurt early in the fourth quarter. I think they scored once after that. ODU scored on four of its final five possessions. So, you know, losing Jackson was probably, you know, was a factor as well for Tech. But, hey, that's the game. That's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, and then presumably, right, you know, they have quote unquote better talent to back up, you know, that's always what you know, G5 coaches say, that, you know, like, our first line guys on our day, we can go toe to toe with, you know, a P5 team, but it's just the depth as you get deeper down the roster that maybe it doesn't match up so well. So
I mean, absolutely, you know. Yeah, I mean, that was one thing Old Dominion has been trying to build towards, is we need, you know, better backups, and they felt like they've had, you know, they've made progress in that area. But yeah, to have a backup quarterback come in and go for 500 yards, more or less, is, you know, that's just unheard of. And, you know, and not just some random guy, but a guy that's, you know, been in the program. And, you know, somebody asked Wilder if Blake had ever shown this kind of, you know, potential. And Bobby's quote was, you know, if he had, he would have been starting from the moment he walked on campus. And, you know, he's had opportunities before, but, you know, he really took advantage of this one. So, as I said, hats off to Blake LaRusso. He's a popular kid around here. He played high school ball in Virginia Beach, and you know, he's got a lot of fans, and so good for him.
Yeah, this is the biggest win. I think everybody was talking about North Texas beating Arkansas, but I think that was a little bit more expected. This was decidedly unexpected. I almost forgot that they were playing this game when I was doing like the picks for the week. You know, I was looking at UCF, all these other in-state kind of, you know, Conference USA versus ranked team games. I was like, okay, I could foresee an FAU victory over UCF under the right circumstances, or yeah. Louisiana Tech over LSU, or FIU over Miami. And, you know, like I said, I almost forgot that. I was like, oh, yeah, Old Dominion's playing Virginia Tech. That's not going to be close. I mean,
no, I think people here thought the 28-point line was, you know, a little generous. That, you know, everybody wanted to, hey, I'll take the Hokies and the points.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, really, you know, no one really gave them a chance. And you know, honestly, they hadn't earned, you know, the benefit of the doubt. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, based on their first performance. But, you know, anything can happen. And, you know, Virginia Tech, I mean, it's possible they're, you know, maybe they were a little inflated. I mean, they beat Florida State, who, you know, is really reeling right now,
yes.
you know. And they beat William Mary, an FCS team that's not very good. So, and then they had a week off, an interrupted week, where they were supposed to play East Carolina. And East Carolina couldn't get out of the area because of the flooding and the weather down there. So, you know, they had an unexpected bye week. And, you know, Justin Fuente was very great, gracious in the seat. He gave ODU a lot of credit. He had, you know, in the run-up to the game, they said, hey, these guys are not bad. You know, they're better than the record, and they're going to get it together. And people kind of just rolled their eyes. You know, this is just coach speak. And,
yeah.
But, you know, these coaches are warriors, and warriors, and you know, they sometimes they're justified, as we found out yesterday.
So, I mean, like I said, I've been of the mind that Old Dominion is a little bit better. I kind of agreed with one. I mean, you know, we've talked about it. You've mentioned how good of an offseason they had and how tough they practiced and how more things were expected. How much of the first three losses, because I know Bobby Wilder's mentioned this, he said they were all kind of weird circumstances, you know, and does that explain some of those weird games there? Charlotte one is the weirdest, right?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I know they went down to Liberty, and, you know, before kickoff, there was a thunderstorm, and, you know, the kick was delayed 30 minutes or more. And, you know, Liberty was absolutely fired up. It was their first FBS game. They were, you know, getting a state team to come in there. And, yeah, even with all that, the game was close for a while, and ODU missed some chances, and then, you know, the thing just erupted in the fourth quarter. And given what, you know, North Texas did to Liberty, I think that kind of, you know, puts that in some context. But either North Texas is really good or Liberty's maybe not that good. I think it's probably a little bit of both. But
yeah.
And then FIU, you know, again, they were just second half. They were just kind of out-schemed and out-done. And then Charlotte, you know, they just kind of never got it quite together. It was a very winnable game. You know, they missed some opportunities, and they just weren't able to put a whole game together, which, you know, a lot of coaches say, but it was true. And the Charlotte game was, again, it was on a short week. They played Thursday. They didn't find out until Wednesday. They'd actually be playing on Thursday. They left Tuesday. So that was a little odd. The FAU game, it was a two-hour rain delay, but again, that was a lightning delay. But, you know, that's the same for both teams. So, you know, it's really hard to say, but this game was about as normal, you know, in terms of it kicked off at 3:30. It wasn't interrupted. And, you know, the fans were into it. There were a lot of Virginia Tech fans there, but there were, you know, ODU fans, turned out. And the longer it went on, you know, the louder they got. And at the end, the place just kind of erupted, as you might expect. So it was pretty cool. It was a cool night because, you know, obviously they haven't been playing football very long here. And even the university itself is fairly young. I mean, it's only been a university for about 50 years. It was kind of an offshoot of some other schools before that. So they don't have a lot of moments like this that have kind of bound the community together, you know, like a big win like this can do. So, you know, Wilder, of course, was saying he thought it was one of the biggest things that ever happened in the university. And, you know, hey, who's to say it's not, you know, I mean they won national titles here and women's basketball a long time ago, Nancy Lieberman and Ann Donovan, and, you know, had some success with men's basketball, a couple of upsets in the NCAA tournament, but, you know, probably nothing that approaches this. I mean, football is just different, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Harry Minium wrote, I think, today, something along those lines, that this is the biggest win, even considering those other national championships, et cetera. I mean, it's hard to argue that.
You know, it was 40 years ago. You know, the media wasn't pervasive then. And, you know, some of those were in Division II. They did win a Division II national basketball championship in the 70s. Yeah. You know, women's basketball wasn't quite as widespread as the interest as it is now, for sure, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s. So, yeah, this is it. I mean, you know, OU fans, they celebrated. I saw some social media. I'm not sure if it was real, but kind of hoping it wasn't. But we'll find out. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, I mean, great talking to you. Thanks for jumping on Sunday morning, you know.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to be honest with you. Honestly, maybe the rest of the year, unless we were talking about a new coach or something. So, it's always fun. And, I wasn't expecting really to. We had three people there, and one guy who covers Virginia Tech routinely, a columnist, and then myself. And so the plan was, you know, whoever wins their team, you know, you'll write the game story lead, and the other guy will write something else. So I'm going there thinking I'm going to have like a light day, you know, it's going to be, it's going to be 38-10 or something. And, you know, everyone's just going to, you know, nobody's going to get hurt and we'll all just go home. But yeah, it got kind of crazy. So, and of course, I'm still writing some stuff today to follow up. So it's definitely, but it's been good. You know, it's been fun. So
That's college football for you, right? You never know. Even just a seemingly just, you know, small game, it turns into the biggest game in the history of, right?
Absolutely. Just, and it's young people, and, you know, that's why it's less predictable than, obviously, the NFL. That's what, to a lot of people, that's one of the charms of it. So, it was a good atmosphere, and it was fun. So, anyway, we'll see what happens from here on out.
All right. You have a good one.
Okay, Adam. Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Again, special thanks to Ed for jumping on this podcast. That's twice already. Good times. And Blake LaRussa, turns out, won a national honor. He won the Walter Camp National Offensive Player of the Week Award, the foundation announced. Again, 495 yards passing on 30 of 49 attempts. Four touchdowns, career highs for the Virginia Beach native. The 495 yards is the second most ever given up by a Virginia Tech defense, just 3 yards shy of Scott Milanovic's 498 in 93. Fourth highest by an Old Dominion quarterback. Taylor Heineke had 730, as Ed just said. Good times. That was from the press release, by the way, the weekly award winner. I don't know how sustainable that is. As we just discussed, Old Dominion is good enough. They have the talent there, and I think that is what made that win so cathartic, on top of the other things, right? You know, like the social, cultural implications for the team and the program there. But I think the way the season started really made that win something special and gave it a little extra. And, you know, congratulations to them. Let's move on to the rest of the slate. There was a conference game, folks. Southern Miss, 40 points. Rice, 22 points. I got to say, look, don't put your money on my word, my picks of the week. Because I got this one wrong also. I think I said Rice is going to cover. Jack Abraham looked good in this game. 428 yards passing, four touchdowns in this one. Again, we didn't really think that we'd see a return of Quadric Griggs in this because it was a short week and he's essentially been out like a month, right? A little bit longer than that. So we figured it was going to be Jack Abraham. He went and played a good game. I don't know what you can say about this. We didn't think that Rice was going to be that great coming into this season, but they were going to be like tough, you know, and that if you were slipping on the day, you could be beat. And I thought maybe, you know, Southern Miss would kind of slip a little bit. Maybe they're feeling a little weird. You know, they had a game canceled. So then, you know, like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. And, you know, it can come out a little loose Rice had 2 weeks to prepare for this. Turns out Rice just didn't have enough for Southern Miss. Again, what was that? At one point, I think it was like 17-8, closer than maybe it seemed. I think Rice got it to 15-17, another weird score because they went for two on that in the first one. But Jake Abraham got rolling, and Southern Miss pulled away at the end. But, you know, like, I think it was the third quarter is where they dominated, right? They just kind of pulled away there. And that's about all you could expect. Like, Rice is going to control the ball for the time. When they have it, they like to run the ball a lot. When they get better and they have the defense to complement that team, that run game and that style, they will be tough, really tough. And I think Birmingham, you know, the Blazers out there, UAB, are a little bit better at this thing. But this game was dominated completely by Southern Miss. 566 yards, 428 yards passing again, just 125 yards passing for the Owls, 137 yards rushing, averaged 4.7 yards a rush. That's all good. Southern Miss got their run game unstuck also, 138 yards for them on 31 attempts, 4.5 yards a carry. They're going to be good. I've always been a believer in Southern Miss if they can sort out their quarterback situation. And I didn't really know what to expect with Jack Abraham. I thought maybe, you know, like he was highly touted, but you never know, right? There's a lot of guys that are touted and they come in, you never know what you're going to get. But he looks like the accurate quarterback that they've needed. And I think you saw some shades of this with Steven Williams, a talent, but maybe didn't have the accuracy because you just didn't have the experience. And, you know, Ed Miller's talking about the difficulties that they had in getting some rhythm going. I think you can overcome an inaccurate quarterback or like a quarterback that's maybe just not going to take the check down if they have, like, game-breaking talent, like legs-wise. Or they just, you know, have a ridiculous arm. They could just make throws that are unmakeable for other quarterbacks. But if you don't have that, you could take a game manager type. And I'm not saying that Jack Abraham is that kind of guy, but 70% completions, that's good, and you're getting the ball into playmakers' hands. You know, Edwards is talking about how Old Dominion, Blake LaRusso is getting the ball into his playmakers' hands and letting them go and play. A lot of that is what Southern Miss needed the past couple of seasons. And when Quadra Griggs and when Keon Howard were able to do that, they looked unbeatable. They looked like one of the most explosive teams in the league. And when they were unable to do that, that's when, you know, teams, you know, were able to beat them. That's where they got into these shootouts that they didn't need to be in. And just turnovers also, that was another thing. But yeah, this one, Anderson, I think there was, you know, much was made over the transfer announcement. The backup running back, but freshman Steven Anderson, he got out there and he was at 8 carries, 52 yards rushing, and a score. Tez Park, 6 carries, 31 yards. The Mosley kid, what's his name? Travinsky, 9 carries, 42 yards. Nice little balanced attack by the Mississippi backfield there. Something that head coach Jay Hobson mentioned was going to be the plan coming in. So we feel like our backfield's better than it was last year, just, you know, in terms of depth. And it's taken a couple weeks, but this has been the case for the entire league, except for perhaps Rice and UAB. Is that it's taken a while for everybody to kind of figure out what this running game is going to be without Ito Smith there. Just, you know, nice balanced passing attack. I think 4 or 5 guys had 4 receptions or more. On the other side, I mean, Rice, you didn't really expect too much, but this is the kind of game that you thought maybe. The good news for them is that they're scoring, right? I don't know what their scoring average is, but they had like 31 in their opening game. They had 27 against Houston, 29 against Hawaii. 22 is not bad. You can win a game with 22 points, but you'd like to see that somewhere around 30. And I think they're going to get there. They got a tough game at Wake Forest coming up. Wake Forest just fired the defensive coordinator because he just gave up a bunch of points to Notre Dame. And you got UTSA coming through. UTSA didn't score points, so that's a game. Yeah, that's a game I've had long circled and said, hey, you got to look out for this one if you're UTSA. Because that's at Rice Stadium. that's going to be a winnable game. I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. And even that UAB game, I know I've been talking up UAB, but it's a home game, and then they like to run the ball. So there's a lot more variance there because you get a limited number of possessions. So just a couple things go right for Rice. That's a win. I've been saying they're going to jump up and bite somebody. And just looking at the schedule right here, that looks like the game they're going to jump up and bite. They're probably going to be favored against the UTEP. And who knows what Old Dominion has anymore right now. I really don't know what to expect. You never know what to expect at any point in the season. I think ESPN has them, Rice I mean, as favored against UTEP only. That's the only thing. On the other side, Southern Miss, they look like, what is it they're favored against? They got Auburn coming up. That's a tough one. Obviously, Auburn looks really good. They beat up on Arkansas. Auburn did. Then a big game at North Texas. In an example of how quickly things could change, last year at The Rock, Southern Miss was hosting UNT, and they had North Texas down. Was it a couple scores? I think it was. They had them down early. And then they just kind of fell over themselves, couldn't complete a pass. I think Quadra Griggs completed less than 50% of his passing. And North Texas just went off. Jalen Guyton had like 200 yards receiving. And that was a tough loss for them. Two teams that I think were very similar last year. But I think you can probably say that Southern Miss had the better defense then. They certainly had more talent on the defensive side. Now that's kind of flipped, and I think this is a game that they're going to be circling. Right, they want to avenge that loss. And then you get UTSA at home, and that's a game I think ESPN has them favored. Pretty favorable schedule conference-wise, outside of the Auburn one, that's going to be tough. But you already got a conference win under your belt, right? And then you travel to North Texas. That's going to be a tough game, obviously. But I think they're going to be up for it. And you got a quarterback like Jack Abraham out there that can complete passes at a 70% clip. You're giving yourself a chance to compete. And North Texas' defense is really good. Best, I think they rank nationally, like top in passes deflected, and they're creating pressure and they're getting interceptions. They lead the nation like interceptions at something like 10. A lot of that was the 6 interceptions against Arkansas, but they grabbed another one against a good passing team in Liberty, and a good quarterback. So you need all the tools in your belt if you're going to play North Texas, especially on the road in Denton. But UTSA is beatable. Charlotte's beatable. I think Marshall's beatable, and that Marshall's in Hattiesburg. Travel to UAB. That's going to be a tough one. And then Louisiana Tech and UTEP. No game there that you're saying that's definitely a loss. But you definitely started out on the right foot, getting a win against Rice. Good stuff sneakily happening in Southern Miss and Hattiesburg over there. Other game, non-conference game, right, is Western Kentucky beating Ball State. And, maybe Mike Sanford digging his way out of the doghouse, out of the hot seat. You know, it's another win. It's an ugly win, right? It's not the kind of win that they were getting in years past under Jeff Brohm, where you're blowing teams out, you know, getting 40, 50 points a game. But it's a win. And wins are better than losses. And I know that sounds silly, but it's the truth. And when you've been losing, or you've been losing to Maine, right, getting any kind of win feels good, and that's how you start building your program. You get guys to start buying in and say, see, when we do the things right, we win, and then you want to continue to do things right, and then you can, you know, build that up. Ball State had a lead in this one. I think they led for most of the game, and they definitely led in the fourth quarter. It wasn't until Myquan Dean got an 18-yard pass from Stephen Duncan that Western Kentucky took a lead, and then they got another touchdown to end things late in the fourth quarter. Tough game with Ball State. I don't really know what we think about this one, because Ball State's they're a little unknown to me. I'm not up on my Mac football. The story here was that Stephen Duncan came off the bench to throw for 94 yards and 2 scores, lead the final 2 drives there. Davis Shanley started the game. He was 13-19, 158 yards. I think they went into halftime down 10-7. there were some questions, and I think, you know, like, Stanford's like playing quarterback roulette here, trying to figure out which one is going to be the starter. It looked like Duncan came in there and made the job his, maybe. 12 of 16, 94 yards, two scores is good, but it's not amazing. And, I mean, overall, this is not a great offensive performance. Again, 446 yards is good, but it's not amazing. 252 yards passing is okay. The real story was the run game, 194 yards rushing. That rush game has struggled under Sanford in his time, and that kind of coincides with this 2-10, I think, is in, two wins out of his last 10. I believe that's what it was. Big games coming up for Western Kentucky as they take on Marshall, I think, next. That's going to be a huge game. We're going to figure out what's going on with those two teams. That's going to be the first conference game for both of them. I'm still not sold on Mike Sanford, and I think this win does help him. But Ball State is not going to really turn anybody's heads, especially, you know, pulling out a nail biter against Ball State. But last 2 weeks, Louisville 20-17 losers, and then 28-20 winners against Ball State. Do give them some hope, right? It kind of takes a stench away from that main game. If you can go and beat Marshall at home, then you're on your way to turn around the season. As I've been saying for everybody else, nothing's happened so far. This is all non-conference stuff. Marshall's when the season begins. That's when the real season begins. And yes, you want to make a bowl game. Yes, you want to do all that stuff, but competing for conference championships is where it matters, right? This is that should be the standard at Western Kentucky. They proved it. Back-to-back conference titles. So that's where you would like to see Western Kentucky. Again, you got Marshall. Then you got a very winnable Charlotte game. And, I mean, let's be honest. We don't think that Old Dominion's all the way back. They had a great win. But as we just talked about, anything can happen. But it's funny that now people are talking about Western Kentucky as like a winnable game, right? Well, that's at home. Western Kentucky gets Old Dominion at home. Get FIU at home. That should be a very winnable game if everything is moving right. If they can get the figure out the quarterback situation and they can run the ball and play some defense. Right now, I think ESPN has Western Kentucky winning three of their last was it six or seven games. So not ideal. But you never know what's going to happen. You know, last year, the FAU matchup was a big game, and now it's not a big game at all. UTEP's very winnable. Old Dominion, Charlotte, like the easy wins. Louisiana Tech, remember that? Used to be a fun game, a shootout game. I think ESPN has a win probability at 18% in that final game of the year, November 24th. So times have changed in Kentucky. And not for the good. Not for the good at all. North Texas, 47-7. Took care of business. We're not going to talk about this one too much. Except to mention that the defense is still good. They intercepted a Buckshot Calvert there. And the run game got unstuck. Lauren Easley, 27 carries, 177 yards, two touchdowns. The run game for North Texas, 300 yards rushing in that one. It was a little closer. This is another weird one because of the Lightning. It was 21-7 at half. And, you know, as has been the case with North Texas, they went down, scored a couple easy touchdowns, and they kind of struggled in other parts. The defense was solid. They killed an early drive that might have made it a game for Liberty when they intercepted Buckshot at the 7-yard line. That was Kyrie Muhammad, who's second in the nation, tied for with a bunch of other guys, including both other defensive backs, Keemon Hall for North Texas and Nate Brooks for North Texas with three interceptions. He got a clutch interception, kind of killed the drive, and really took the life out of Liberty, the flame out of Liberty. And the thing about it is that once it was raining, North Texas had a 1-2 punch, right? They had a run game, they had a pass game that was successful. And once it came down to running the ball, because the, you know, people were dropping the ball was slipping out of the quarterback's hands, Liberty didn't really have anything there. They couldn't run the ball that well, even though I think their guy had like 96 yards rushing. But at one point, North Texas they covered 80 yards in five plays with all runs, and all like the same two runs, like a little power sweep and then a little inside zone. Just completely dominated the game. And, you know, I think they scored 26 points in the second half, including 20 in the fourth quarter when they were just really trying to run the clock out, but just scoring touchdowns. Very businesslike wins for the conference's best team. North Texas takes on Louisiana Tech in the game of the week, perhaps game of the year. This is a huge game. I don't know, realize if everybody realizes how important this one is. I called this one the determinant for this division. Louisiana Tech, I've been high on them all season, and you know, if it weren't for North Texas defense just playing outstandingly, I think that maybe there would be question marks about the North Texas offense. Pass game has been hit or miss. We haven't really seen the explosive North Texas offense that we saw last year, where I think they led the conference in yard and plays over 15 plus. This season, you know, you're not getting the same kind of explosion. Some of that's because the defense giving them short fields, but I think Mason Fine has said it, Seth Luttrell said it, the head coach from North Texas, not quite clicking the way it was last year. If they can get the run game unstuck, then I think maybe all those problems are solved and everybody's going to worry about everything. But let's talk about Louisiana Tech for a moment, and then we'll talk about their matchup next week. Tech, 21-38 losers to Louisiana State. That was a big game. This is one of the games that, you know, it was an in-state game, right? There's like the Florida-UCF game, same kind of deal. Louisiana Tech, LSU game, and Miami and FIU were all in-state games against ranked opponents, and I thought we'd win one of them, right? The league, Conference USA would win one of those games, and it turned out it was the Old Dominion one. That in-state game was the one. I almost forgot that was the same situation, just because it was so it seemed so far-fetched that Old Dominion would do anything, let alone cover. So. This game was kind of dominated by LSU early. Was it like 24-0 for a while? And then Tech kind of started turning things on, got it to 21-24, and then Louisiana State just turned it on and kind of ended things. What's good about this is that Jamar Smith had 330 yards passing, and I think three touchdowns is what it was. You know, that's the kind of Jamar Smith that everybody wanted to see and expected to see in his second year, and that you got that play from him is good. I think his completion percentage left something to be desired, something like 50%. And a lot of these passes were deep down the field. Hardy had 10 grabs, 181 yards. Adrian Hardy, I mean, two scores, including the one, I think it was like it's double coverage. And that's the thing, that looks great. You're like, okay, that was an amazing catch, but why were you throwing into double coverage? There's talent on his Tech team. Jaquiz Dancy, 7 carries, 31 yards. Longest is 13. You expect that going against LSU. If you're not able to run the ball, then you're probably not going to be able to beat them, right? You remember Troy beat LSU because they were able to run the ball. They were just dominating. But you thought maybe you had something, right? Jamar Smith can throw the ball. There's talent out wide. Maybe you can open things up and get some runs. Didn't quite happen. Only 87 yards rushing for Tech, and was it 218 yards rushing for LSU? That, again, you kind of figured that was going to happen, but you thought maybe if you can keep him one-dimensional and make plays against Burrow, but he's a game manager dude, didn't throw a touchdown, but didn't throw an interception either, right? They made plays when they needed to and just kind of, you know, choked the game away. I think Tech outgained LSU 417 to 409, and you know, this was a little too late. If you don't go down 24, then you know you're in this game. You like that you scored 21 points and you scored each quarter, right? It meant you're consistent throughout the game, but you didn't score in the first quarter, right? And you allowed 17 and then 14. You allowed multiple score quarters for LSU, and that's why you lost the game. Overall, good performance against the number 6 team in the country, right? You can be proud of this one, but you really think that, hey, if Louisiana Tech wants to compete for conference championships, right, if they think that they're one of the best teams in this league, then this is a game that you feel maybe got away from you. I think maybe LSU's a little overrated, I'm going to be honest with you. But, I mean, you're not going to be upset. Nobody's going to get fired over this game, right? It's fine. You want to win it, but it's fine. I think that Tech has the defensive talent and they have the offensive talent to compete with North Texas. The trouble is, it's going to be in Denton. This is a huge game, though, right? I think Tech is 2-1 on the season so far. And, you know, they haven't really played anybody amazing. South Alabama's not that great, and they beat Southern. Haven't really been tested. And I think you can say the same thing about North Texas, but the difference here is that North Texas played teams that they should have beat, right? These are teams where you're like, okay, North Texas played Incarnate Word. Okay, who's Incarnate Word? But they whooped Incarnate Word. You're like, okay, SMU's not good, but they whooped SMU the way a good team should beat a bad team. Liberty won 52-17 or 52-10 against Old Dominion. And, you know, North Texas went up there, had an off day, lightning delay that should derail their pass game, and, you know, dominates 47-7. The concern, I think, if you're Louisiana Tech, is that Jamar Smith is not completing passes at a good enough clip that you feel like you can move the ball consistently against this North Texas team. But as Ed Miller was talking about earlier, you can beat him with a strategy. If he can throw the deep ball, we know he can, right? If he can hit Veal, if he can hit Hardy on these one-on-one matchups, if they can beat Keemon Hall, Nate Brooks on the outside, then you feel good about yourself, right? North Texas has had a lot of success bringing pressure, right? EJ Ajaya and the other linebacker, Brandon Garner, are leading the nation in sacks and tackles for loss and havoc plays because they're bringing pressure. The defensive line is also getting enough pressure that they're allowing these linebackers to make plays. And so you feel good if you can win those matchups. And a lot of it comes down to that, right? Arkansas couldn't win those matchups. SMU couldn't win those matchups. Incarnate Word couldn't win those matchups. Liberty couldn't win those matchups. However, they did. They were able to hit some plays. They were able to hit a couple deep passes. And yes, Troy Reffa, the defensive coordinator for North Texas, is willing to live with those because they're getting other plays on the other side. They're getting sacks. They're getting interceptions. A lot of interceptions, 10. Jamar Smith has a tendency to throw some interceptions sometimes, and he's not always accurate. And you don't know if you're going to be able to hit enough of those plays against North Texas, who's at home, again, with a run game that's getting unstuck and a pass game that's always dangerous. You don't know if you're going to get enough scoring to win that game. I thought that North Texas is going to struggle in this one, but had enough because they're at home, and I thought that their defense was going to have enough. This is all preseason to win this game. Right now, with North Texas defense playing the way it is, I don't see the greatest shot for Louisiana Tech in this one. But anything can happen, right? And this is going to be a fun game. Louisiana Tech has always played well in Dallas-Fort Worth area, right? Last time they were there, they beat SMU and they whooped SMU in basically a suburb of Dallas, right, in Frisco. They won that Heart of Dallas Bowl. I think they won the Fort Worth Bowl last time they were there. They do well in that area. Tech's going to travel well. They're going to get a lot of fans there. North Texas is doing it up. They're going to unveil a Mean Joe Green statue. This is a big game. It's the biggest game in this league, probably between the two best teams in the division, definitely, but maybe in the conference right now. I know a lot of people point to FAU and say, you know, hey, they're good, and you can't really discount what they did last season, but they're relying on a freshman quarterback. As talented as that dude is, he's a freshman quarterback, and we've seen that, you know, he giveth and he taketh away, right? Three interceptions against UCF, and yes, UCF is good, but you need a guy that can complete passes and move the ball and get it to playmakers. Tech, I think this is two games that they're not favored in the rest of the way are the North Texas game and the Mississippi State game. But then you got UAB, UTSA, UTEP, all very winnable. UAB's in Ruston. They travel to Ruston. Tech travels to UTSA, and UTSA is terrible right now. And then home to UTEP. UTEP's awful. So that Rice game might be a question mark there. Last year, Tech and Rice played a surprisingly close game. So you never know what's going to happen there. Again, I think Rice is going to upset somebody, and that certainly seems like the kind of game that they would jump up and bite somebody. But a lot of winnable games the rest of the way. So even if they slip up against North Texas, right, you don't know that North Texas is going to, you know, win out It's very possible. It certainly seems that way. And I think North Texas is favored the rest of the way. But FAU does travel to North Texas, and FAU certainly has North Texas' number, right? Was it 1,000 yards of offense or 1,400 yards of offense in two games against them last year, 110 points in two games against them last year. You know, anything can happen. Somebody's going to beat somebody. Somebody might jump up and bite North Texas. I was joking about this on the Mean Green Nation podcast. Wouldn't it seems like it's all set up because, you know, North Texas, UTSA have this little mini rivalry. North Texas finishes up the season at UTSA. Wouldn't it just kind of seem perfect, too perfect, for UTSA to upset North Texas and disrupt their undefeated season by just some terrible, crazy game in that final one? Certainly seems that way to me. Because, you know, UTSA just played this ugly game, 25-21 winners over Texas State. And in a rivalry game there, right? They're 3-0 in this one, the I-35 rivalry, I think they're calling it. There was some talk about getting a better trophy from it. It does look like an office trophy. It looks pretty terrible. This one was ugly. UTSA and Texas State traded ugly games at each other. 248 total yards for Texas State, just 272 for UTSA. Like, if this was an NFL game from like 93, you'd be like, wow, high powered offenses, huh? But no, this is 2018 Conference USA. You want something better. Texas State turned the ball over three times. One of those was taken back for a touchdown by UTSA. So even some of the points, and I think the defense had eight total points, right? The six from the score and then two from a safety. That won the game, basically, right? Because Texas State was driving and they were looking to win the game. They just needed a field goal that was going to win things. But UTSA got a safety, saved the day, right? There was like a minute left. I don't really buy UTSA right now because they look terrible and they win terribly, right? This is an awful game. But a win is a win, right? We just talked about that with Western Kentucky. A win's a win, and you know that's how you can start building things up. This was, I think, the narrative coming in among the more optimistic UTSA fans. It was like, hey, we played three FBS squads, right? Power Five squads. No other team has done that. You got to give us some slack. We got some young guys at quarterback. You know, trust the process, basically, right? But of the three they played, Arizona State's probably the best team right now, I guess. And they're not even that great. Baylor is still kind of bouncing back. They're a Power Five team, yes. But Baylor looked a lot better against UTSA than they have elsewhere. And then Kansas State, you know, barely beat a FCS team by three. They pretty much handled UTSA. So this game, you're like, okay, here's a clearly awful Texas State team, a team that UTSA completely dominated last season in San Marcos. It was like something like they outgained them by like 500 yards, and they won by like 40 points, right? 30 or 40 points. You're not super excited about a 4-point win at home where you outgain the awful Texas State Bobcats by something like 30 yards, whatever it was. Another basement game. You remember another basement game against UTEP coming up, and this one's at the Alamo Dome. Do you remember two seasons ago when these two teams, UTEP and UTSA, played a thriller? It was like 59-56, triple overtime game. I don't think we're going to see that. We're going to see two awful offenses go at each other in this one. That's this Saturday. This might be the game that UTEP can win. Speaking of UTEP, right, 27-20 losers and a rivalry game. This is like rivalry week. New Mexico State snuck out a win over there. It's still long, long, slow process for UTEP right now. I didn't really watch too much of this game, I'll be honest with you. And I dare you to find somebody that actually did. I think New Mexico jumped out early. It kind of controlled the game. Loxley was 10-16, 194 yards, a score, an interception. New Mexico just they kind of pulled away late. This is an ugly game between two ugly teams, right? UTEP had 429 yards of offense, so that feels good. But then you do it against New Mexico, so then you're like, how sustainable is this, guys? You liked that the rush game was good, Wadley, 111 yards. Loxley, 64 yards on the ground, and he had a long of 34. He can move it. He's the future. But I think they're a little too up and down to really get some wins over here. Maybe if this game was in El Paso and not in San Antonio, you feel like it's a win. But I think this is a winnable game for UTEP, just so you know. UTSA is that bad. Who else played? Marshall played. Marshall lost to NC State, and this was not really close. And NC State picked off a pass, took it back. You don't feel good about that. You remember I was a little down on Marshall because I didn't think as good as Green has played, Isaiah Green, right? As good as he's played so far this year, he's young, and I think you have to score points at a good enough clip to win this league. And I pointed out that the last team to lead the conference and not win the title was Marshall, and that was in 2013 when Rice upset them in the conference title game. And that was 2013. You score in this league, you win in this league. And I don't know that Marshall can score at a good enough clip. And the thinking was, hey, talking to Marshall fans, they're saying, hey, look, we can stop North Texas. We can stop an FAU, and we got a good enough offense that can score. Right now, it looks like North Texas has a good enough defense to stop whatever Marshall has. And Marshall doesn't have too much at this point. So far, 820 yards on the season, 6 touchdowns against 3 interceptions for Isaiah Green. That's good. Again, freshman. And you're going to have games like this where they kind of pick on you. And that's what happened in this one. NC State, they kind of did what they wanted. 377 yards passing for Finley, the NC State quarterback. I don't know. This is a game you can kind of easily forget and say, hey, you know what, we'll just move on to the next one. But this is another game. I think Marshall were only 6-point underdogs. I pointed this out in the preview that, you know, North Texas were 6-point underdogs to Arkansas, and they whooped up on Arkansas. And Marshall, 6-point underdogs to NC State, and they lose by 17. It's not really what you want from this league if you want this league to get better. And then, again, I'm not just picking on Marshall. I've been saying the same thing about lots of teams that were good in the past few years. When Southern Miss was one of the best teams, you got to say, hey, you guys got to win your non-conference games against these lower-level teams, right? That's a winnable kind of game, and that's a game that you want this league to win more often than it does not win. Let's talk about some of these the other ones. We haven't talked about Florida Atlantic. Mackenzie Milton is good, guys. He's good. I believed in FAU, probably a little too much, but I believed in Lane Kiffin and his ability to game plan. And you saw a little bit of that, right, with his sneaky punts, his sneaky fake punts, 3 straight fakes on fourth down. Fake going for it, and they ended up punting twice. Robinson punted, and I think he had their season-long 58. And then, hey, we'll look like we're going to punt it, and this time we'll fake and we get a run. That sparked him for a little bit. It was 17-14 and a half. He thought maybe, hey, anything can happen here. But then Mackenzie Milton just dominated. He was dancing around FAU defenders. That defense that looked so good last year for Florida Atlantic is gone. Was Chris Kiffin that important? That's what Mike Sanford said. Mike Sanford predicted this at Conference USA Media Days. He said, hey, look, I think it's going to be a struggle there. The good news, Motor Singletary scoring touchdowns again. If it's FAU game day, Motor Singletary scoring a touchdown. That's basically the rule now. 3 scores on the day. He looked very difficult to tackle still. And if Robinson can do anything approaching giving him just some help, then you know it's a score. 3 interceptions though, the 3 turnovers on the day for FAU, and that really killed things. They had to go score for score with UCF because they're such a good offense. And you know, if you had maybe last year's FAU, then yeah. The good news is I don't know that North Texas is as good as UCF right now. Just definitely not a complete team. Mason Fine is good and he's dynamic, but he's not Mackenzie Milton dynamic. He's not going to dance around the whole team and spin for scores. So you like your chances to to compete with the rest of the league of Conference USA. And I think you say to yourself, hey, look, we lost to some really good teams. Oklahoma, right? Number 7 in the country. 63-14. Yeah, it got away from us. Okay. But we can score. We scored against Air Force. We scored against Bethune-Cookman. And we scored against UCF, right? We gave them a game, 36 points. We beat ourselves, right? 3 interceptions. But, I mean, Middle Tennessee's not going to score like that. Old Dominion's not going to score like that. Marshall's not going to score like that. Then you got to look out for Tech, right? Maybe FIU if the defense kind of shows up, but you never know what FIU you're going to get. And we'll talk about them in a second. And then North Texas. And the trouble with North Texas is that you're traveling to North Texas, right? That you beat them twice, yes, but you beat them at home both times. And a cross-country trip, and that's basically cross-country, Denton to Boca Raton. Those take out a lot out of you. So we'll see the return trip, if that means anything for FAU. That's going to be, you know, that's going to be a deal. I'm still bullish on FAU. And I think let's see what ESPN says about their FPI the rest of the way. I want to say they're going to be favored in a lot of these games. I'm lying. Apparently they think Middle Tennessee is going to whoop them. ESPN says Old Dominion, Western Kentucky, and Charlotte are your 3 wins, but not favored the rest of the way. And the other ones, and that includes Middle Tennessee, Marshall, Tech, FIU, and North Texas. I'm a little bit more of a believer than ESPN is, I think, at this point. And I think we all know what FAU did last year once they got into conference play. They just turned it up. Was it last year? Was it Old Dominion, Middle Tennessee, and then North Texas? Or the other way around? I forget. But this league has shown that it has a way of not being able to defend FAU, right? Record-setting year last year. We'll see what happens when they enter conference play, and they begin that this Saturday at Middle Tennessee. Who's off this week? So they get to prepare. I think maybe that's why they're hopeful, I guess, or maybe doubtful. 40% win probability, says ESPN. It's at Murfreesboro, so that's another feather there. Massachusetts whooping up on Charlotte. You know, remember last week when Charlotte beat Old Dominion and I was joking that, hey, Brad Lambert just climbed up above of Bobby Wilder? Well, losing this way, you remember FIU whooped up on UMass. Remember that? 63 points on UMass. Now UMass, 49-31 winners over Charlotte. And all those problems that we knew that Charlotte has, they kind of reappeared. 28-0 into the first quarter for Massachusetts. Into the half, was it 35-10 or something like that? This is just a laugher. All the points that were scored later, I think it was like 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns in the second half for Charlotte. It was just over from the beginning. And I mean, I don't even know what you can say about this. This is what we expected. Charlotte doesn't look like a good team. Yeah, they got 2 wins, Fordham and Old Dominion. But, you know, they played an actual good team in App State. 45-9 was the result. They go to UAB. Remember they snuck up and beat UAB in a surprising game last year? They go to UAB this time. I don't expect we'll see a repeat. As bad as Western Kentucky is, I don't think they're losing to Charlotte. I don't see a win the rest of the way, to be honest with you. Nothing easy here. They don't get UTSA. Just bad times all around there. Let's talk about this FIU-Miami game. We expected more, and Miami just kind of dominated. Some of that was because they switched up their QB. They don't have their Rozier guy, or Rozier, whatever he wants to call himself now. They stuck in, what's his name, the kid Perry. And, you know, he threw 3 touchdowns. He did throw a pick. James Morgan did not impress, and we were looking at him to be the catalyst, the guy that kind of changed the fortunes there. He played well last couple weeks. But he threw an interception. He was 12 of 24, just 168 yards. Miami's defense is too good. And just domination. It was 24-0 at half, and I think they made it 31-0 in the third quarter. FIU didn't appear till in the fourth, and they got some consolation scores. Nothing doing there. It was pretty disappointing. And we expect a little bit better out of FIU, but they're just not on Miami's level right now. And, you know, that's disappointing for everybody. FIU's 2-2 on the year, and things are not all bad because they do have a conference win. They beat Old Dominion, right? You really would have liked to see them play better against Indiana and Miami, but they're just not there. They got a tune-up game against was it an FCS squad next week. I forget who they play. And then they begin conference play in October. So some time to kind of lick their wounds and reset things. This is what FIU did last year. They underperformed. You're like, oh, okay, they're terrible. Then they showed up and they played well. Then you're like, oh, okay, they're terrible again. But then they snuck in and get a bowl appearance. I'm just mostly disappointed in them. I thought they were going to play better. I believed in FIU, and maybe I shouldn't have. And I think that's it for the conference slate, right? We talked about everybody. This NC State Marshall game, yeah, we talked about everybody. I think they haven't released the conference players of the week yet. But I imagine that's going to be, I mean, who's outstanding? Probably Jack Abraham. Is he going to be a conference player of the week? Offensive. I don't know the defensive player of the week. Maybe Kyrie Muhammad. I think he had another interception. And I have no idea for the special teamer. But another week down in Conference USA. Let's take a quick look at next week. Rice, Wake Forest, Old Dominion, East Carolina, a couple of non-conference games. Old Dominion gets to see if they really dig themselves out of the hole. Southern Miss and Auburn, that's a tough game. I don't really think that Southern Miss has what it takes to win that one, but that would be sweet. It would be a sweet win for the conference. A conference matchup game, UTEP, UTSA, again, I think that's one that UTEP wins, or has a chance to win. I'm sorry. Charlotte, UAB. I think UAB gets their first conference win of the season. FAU at Middle Tennessee. That's going to be tough. ESPN FPI doesn't like FAU, but I do. I like FAU. Tech at North Texas in the game of the week. That's going to be huge. And, again, likely a determiner of the rest of the division and everybody's fate in the division. I like North Texas in this one. I think their defense is playing too well, and I think that Jamar Smith is prone to turning the ball over, and which is what North Texas feeds on. Plus, they got the home crowd, and I think it should be packed there. So just a little too much stacked against the Louisiana Tech in that one. Marshall at Western Kentucky. This used to be a much bigger marquee matchup, and now it's just kind of let's see how much Marshall's going to win this game by. Western Kentucky, they're still playing quarterback roulette. You never know what you're going to get. I don't think Sanford knows what he's going to get any week. Marshall should have enough to beat Western Kentucky fairly handily. Arkansas Pine Bluff at FIU. As I said, I think the Panthers lick their wounds. They win this one, and they get back to feeling good at 3-2. So that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to this extended edition of the Conference USA Report podcast. Once again, find us on iTunes, leave a review, tell me how much you like me or how much you hate me. Send me an email, podcast at conferenceusareport.com, that's cusareport.com, or tweet at me, that's cusareport.com. Again, thanks to Ed Miller for jumping on the show. Next week, we're probably going to talk to a North Texas or Louisiana Tech guy about that game of the week. That's the one my eyes are on. But just like this week, you never know what's going to happen, right? You know, maybe Southern Miss just blows out Auburn, and we have to talk to those guys and ignore the Tech North Texas game. That's college football for you, and that's what makes it fun. That's why we love it. So, thanks again. See you next week.